Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Shannon Shepherd, and I am here representing the petitioner in this case. This is an appeal from the denial of a motion to reopen an immigration case where the deportation order was entered in absentia. The petitioner did not receive notice of the hearing where that order was entered, and upon discovery of that order's existence, she filed this motion to reopen with the immigration court. There is affirmative evidence in the immigration court's file that the hearing notice was returned to the sender, i.e. the immigration court, attempted not known. The petitioner has conceded that the service of the notice was proper and that it was sent to the address, to her address that she provided, but the issue, as this court has repeatedly explained, is not in the adequacy of the notice, but in the actual receipt. Based on the envelope in the court's file showing that the notice was returned to the immigration court, there is actual evidence that it was not received. Therefore, the immigration judge erred, and the BIA erred in affirming his ruling that the case should not be reopened. There's also no evidence in the file that the petitioner tried to thwart delivery or to make herself unreachable. This is distinguishable from cases where the immigration court has gotten a notice back that was sent certified mail that was unclaimed. In other words, the alien had the opportunity to go get the notice but just failed to do so. In this case, there was no such evidence. This is also, as this court has reiterated in many cases, a case where the government is really in the best position to know how to address the notice properly. The INS agent who apprehended the petitioner took down the address that she gave but failed to ask whether it was an apartment or a house, which he could have done. Additionally, the notice could have been served personally on the respondent at the same time. A court date could have been set at that time. However, the order to show cause that was served on the petitioner in this case simply said that the court date would be at a time to be determined. The order to show cause gave the petitioner no indication of when she could expect that hearing notice to come or what to do if the notice never came. It is also worth noting that the notice of hearing was returned to the court nearly 5 months before the entry of the in absentia order. The envelope found in the court's file was marked return to the court in July of 1996, whereas the hearing date was in December of 1996. But it appears that for that time, from July to December, the immigration court took no steps to try to resend the notice or to otherwise notify the then INS, which has now been supplanted by the Department of Homeland Security, that they had an incorrect address. Instead, the returned envelope sat in the court's file, and no other attempts were made to serve it on the petitioner, despite the fact that there was actual knowledge that the petitioner did not receive it.
Was there a hearing in the immigration court?
There was an in absentia hearing. There was no transcript of the hearing provided either during the process of the motion to reopen or on appeal. The petitioner, through her prior counsel, repeatedly asked for a transcript so that they could see whether anything had been said regarding the service or what attempts were made.
Did the immigration judge say anything? I've forgotten what he said. Did he say that he thought she had deliberately given an inaccurate address?
The immigration judge's decision on the motion to reopen did contain a line saying something to the effect of the petitioner cannot make herself unavailable. But in this case, There's no evidence that she made herself unavailable, as I mentioned.
The immigration judge didn't make a finding that she made herself unavailable?
No, Your Honor. It was a comment that was...
possibility or something?
Yes, it was a comment that was put in.
And the Board of Immigration Appeals didn't...
Correct. And as I said, the petitioner concedes that that was the address she gave and the adequacy of the service was proper. But again, as this court has explained, the issue is not in that service. That's one issue, but the other issue is whether the alien actually received the notice. The immigration court and the BIA also seem to emphasize the length of time that passed between the entry of the in absentia order and the filing of the motion to reopen. But there's actually, under the law, there's no limit to the time in which a petitioner can file a motion of this type. The law clearly states that if the alien did not receive notice, there's no time limit, or the time limits are waived on filing a motion to reopen.
She'd only been in the United States a few months, is that true, in April 96?
That's correct, Your Honor. She'd been here
less than a year. Do we know anything about how good her English was then?
The petitioner in her affidavit that was attached to the motion to reopen stated that she did not understand English at the time of her apprehension. She may have had basic knowledge of give me your name and address, but her affidavit said that she did not understand what the officer was telling her or what the next steps in the case were going to be.
And she came into awareness of the existence of this in absentia order in the process of applying for adjustment through her husband, is that right?
Yes, Your Honor. In 2006, she and her husband had filed I-130, I-485 applications for adjustment of status. And then in, I believe it was 2010, immigration agents came to their home and informed her of the notice. And then shortly after that, she had retained counsel and filed the motion to reopen. So once she discovered the order, she did act quickly.
And to clarify, there was no hearing before the immigration judge on the motion to reopen for purposes of rescinding the in absentia order? That was done on the papers?
That's correct, Your Honor. It was just done on the filings. There was no hearing held.
Okay. So there was never an opportunity for her to make record or be questioned, apart from what was in her affidavit, to get sort of in the door on that issue.
That's correct, Your Honor.
So we don't really know a lot of the specifics associated with her residency during the operative time period and whether it was her fault that she didn't get the order. Everybody agrees she didn't get the order.
That's correct, Your Honor. And she also, because there was no hearing on the motion to reopen and no transcript provided, she has little information, or her counsel has little information as to what...
There was a hearing and no transcript.
I'm sorry. The initial deportation proceedings in 1996, there was a hearing held in absentia. But there was no transcript of that hearing provided, so we don't know what evidence or what assertions the government made.
But that's not really the relevant hearing.
But yes, as to the motion to reopen, there was no hearing on that. That was solely decided on the papers.
But his comment about not making yourself you can't not make yourself available, that wasn't in 96, was it?
No, that was in the 2011.
When he denied
11, yes.
Reopening, that's
correct.
When he remarked that, but with no basis in having interviewed her to find out what.
Correct.
Well, and as I understand that statement, or as I read that statement from the immigration judge, that wasn't in the nature of any sort of finding or conclusion, but rather as a statement of what the law is. In other words, the law applicable to rescinding these in absentia orders does not allow the alien to make themselves unavailable.
Yes, and actually what the statute says is that the alien is required to give their address, and that if they do not receive notice of the hearing, they are allowed to file to reopen the hearing, and there's no time limit on that ability to file that motion. So it's true that if she had moved and failed to provide her address, that would be her fault. But as you said, Your Honor, there was no hearing to determine whether that was the case, and she asserts that that was not the case, that she was at that address, and she conceived that that was the proper address for them to send it to, but yet there was evidence in the court file that she did not receive it. I see my time.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Ms. Shepherd. Ms. Liu? Ms. Lott, I'm sorry.
May it please the Court, I'm Melissa Lott, appearing on behalf of the Attorney General. The Court should deny the petitions for review because petitioner did not demonstrate that her failure to receive the notice of hearing was not her fault. As the moving...
Wait a second. I don't understand. What's she supposed to do?
Well, as the moving party, she had the burden of proof to demonstrate that she did not receive the notice of hearing after providing the government...
That's what she said. She didn't know. She didn't receive it. What more should she be?
Well, she, in her motion to reopen, she simply said she didn't receive the notice of hearing, which we know that's undisputed because it was returned.
Right.
But she didn't demonstrate that she didn't receive it after she had provided the government with an address where she could be contacted. She said nothing in her motion to reopen, briefed the board, or motion to reconsider about the validity of the Lisle, Illinois address, which she provided to the former INS and to which the immigration court sent the notice of hearing that was returned. In addition, the evidence she submitted with her motion to reopen established that at some point between...
I understand. Where does this idea come from that this is part of the burden of pleading by the alien to not just to say she didn't receive the notice, but to explain it wasn't her fault?
Well,
it's like something that the government would argue, right? They'd say, yeah, you didn't receive the notice. That's a prima facie basis for reopening, but we're going to show that, you know, you gave them a false address or this or that, or you're lying.
Well, here, so the statute at the time, the requirements for rescinding an in absentia order states that the alien must demonstrate that he did not receive notice in accordance with the provisions regarding the sufficiency of the notice of hearing, which include that the alien has to provide an address where he or she can be contacted and must notify the immigration court with any change to that address. And here there's just, she, in her motion to reopen, and at all times before the agency, the petitioner, she never said
where
that she lived there.
Where does the Board of Immigration Appeals articulate this burden that you want to place on her?
The board's March 2012 decision first addresses the statutory requirements for entering an in absentia order. And then the requirements for what needs to be shown for reopening and rescinding.
The board seems confused between the sending of the notice and the receipt. Because what is it? It says the respondent received proper notice of the hearing. What's the basis for that? She didn't receive notice.
When the board addressed her arguments regarding the sufficiency of notice, which she is now conceding the notice was properly served.
After the board's decision?
I'm sorry?
When you say now, after the board's decision?
Yes, yes. So before this court, she's...
You're not defending the board's order. You're defending... a position based on some subsequent concession?
Oh, no, I'm sorry. Before the agency, the petitioner was arguing both that the notice was improper and that she did not receive the notice of hearing. The board's decision dealt with both of those issues. On page 43 of the record, the board addressed the receipt issue and stated that the petitioner did not notify the immigration court of any change in her address until filing her motion to reopen.
Right.
That's a different issue.
That is the different issue. It's all associated with the presumption of receipt if it's properly sent. What the rescission statute is concerned with is actual receipt, not de jure receipt based on the agency having sent the notice in the proper form to the last known address. That's an issue that goes to the validity of the in absentia order, not the alien's entitlement to relief from it. We're talking about her entitlement to relief from it, which depends on actual receipt and whether the reason she didn't receive it is her own fault. That's what our cases say. And neither the board nor the immigration judge addressed that issue. There was no hearing at which that issue could have been fleshed out. As Judge Posner suggested, I don't know that there's a pleading requirement that she affirmatively plead in her motion to reopen that it wasn't my fault. I don't think we require that. There's nothing in the statute or the regs that seems to require it.
Well, the problem is that she had the burden to show that she did provide a correct address to the government.
There's no discussion of that in the board's order.
Well, I believe that they're addressing that when they say that she didn't provide any change of address and she did not.
That's a different position. That's a different problem, the change of address. The question is the initial notice that she didn't receive. Now, where does the board say, well, she didn't receive it because she gave them the wrong address, or or in any event, it was her fault, right? They don't say that.
In that same paragraph, the board is pointing to her lack of. She didn't, in her motion to reopen and her affidavit supporting it, she didn't say that she lived at the Lyle, Illinois address. We know at some point she moved to Addison, Illinois, but she never said when she moved, and there's no indication that she updated her address.
I don't understand. She didn't get the notice. Right? She didn't get the notice.
Right.
Now, is that because she had deliberately given them a false address?
Well, what was before the agency?
Yes or no? Did she deliberately give them a false address?
Well,
will you answer me yes or no? I want a yes or no answer.
I'm sorry, I can't give a yes or no answer.
Why can't
to that
you
question.
Give me a yes or no answer?
Because the issue is
don't
looking
tell me
at
what
the
issue is. I'm asking you, did she deliberately give the government a false address?
We don't know.
Say yes or no, or you don't know.
Well,
yes or no, or you don't know.
Well, as to
no,
her...
Don't I'm say well. I told you, say yes or no, or I don't know.
Yes, she gave them an incomplete address. But she never exhausted that argument before the board. And the problem with...
Hey, you've lost me completely. What are you talking? She gave them an incomplete address. Okay, was that a deliberate attempt to make herself unavailable? Or was it just because her language was very bad?
Well, I can't
yes
speak
or no.
to that. I can't speak to what her...
Well, yes or no.
I don't know why.
And what did the board say about this?
Well, that
the board said nothing about this.
Because she'd never
the
presented
board said
that.
Nothing about this.
Correct, Your
All
Honor.
All she had to say was, I didn't get the notice, which everybody concedes. Now, if you want to argue that this was that she deliberately altered the address knowing the notice wouldn't arrive, and therefore, if that's what you think, as Judge Sykes said, doesn't that require a hearing to determine, you know, what her intentions were?
No, because the motion to reopen, she was required to support that with evidence supporting.
Why does the board say that?
In that same paragraph on page 43, they're referring to the dearth of the paragraph that begins with furthermore.
Right.
They're referring to the dearth of evidence that was in her motion to reopen.
Well, this is about the later stuff. I mean, it starts off, right, about the change in her address. I mean, this is a very confusing paragraph, but starts off about the change of address. And her mailing address remained unchanged. That's a different issue, right?
No, I think that goes to receipt, because in order to show that the lack of receipt supported reopening, she would have to show that she provided a complete and correct address to the INS. And
what does it have to do with the mailing address remaining unchanged?
Because we're not sure. The board, what she presented before the board.
You're talking here about after April 1996, the board.
Oh, after she was served with the order to show cause.
That's what you're talking about. That's what the board is talking about.
Right.
Now, where does the board raise any question about the adequacy of the pleading that she didn't receive notice?
Where they say the respondent also did not submit sufficient
evidence.
Yes, we
agree with the immigration judge that the respondent received proper notice, but she didn't receive any notice. So what is the board talking about?
Well, before the board, petitioner was arguing that notice was not properly served, and that's no longer the issue. The issue, or she's not raising that issue any longer. It's just receipt. But
so this has nothing to do with whether she received service.
Well,
look, the notice that, well, I don't know. It's a complete garble. I don't know. Why I don't understand why the Justice Department defends cases like this. This is a complete confusion, what the board is doing. It's totally confused.
Well, the board does refer to the lack of evidence.
I don't know what they're talking about. I don't know. You say there's some burden of proving that she gave them the correct address, that she has to. Where does that come from? It's certainly not in this order.
It comes from the statute, which required that and requires that the alien must give the government a complete address where he or she can be contacted, and then if that address changes, he or she must update the government with a new address, and that the standard for rescinding an in absentia order.
Look, as soon as the government receives the no delivery return of its mail, it should investigate, right?
Well,
now what happened? Why wasn't it delivered? As far as we know, as far as anyone knows, she did her best to supply a correct address, but it was wrong because she didn't know the language. And the government that had sent the notice did no follow-up, and so she doesn't know what's going on. She has no idea what's going on, and many years pass. So I don't see any analysis of the actual case in this order.
Again, I would just...
It goes back and forth between what happened after April 96 and in April. So you can't... It's very difficult even to tell which time they're talking about.
Right.
Part of the Justice Department, the Board of Immigration Appeals. Why can't the Justice Department create an immigration adjudication system which is minimally adequate and then come up here and defend these ridiculous orders?
Well,
and, of course, this person, who assuming she didn't try to deceive the government. This is now 17 years later. We married, settled in the United States. The Immigration Service has nothing better to do than deport her to Lithuania?
I can't speak to that.
Why doesn't the Justice Department get its act together? This is part of the Justice Department, this incompetent board and this incompetent immigration court that we are constantly reversing. And here what you have is kind of total confusion, an order that is unreadable, and you're suddenly excogitating this new burden of proving. It's not enough to say, I didn't receive the notice. Then the government could say, well, you didn't receive it because you were fooling around. But now you say that the burden is, I didn't receive the notice, even though, you know, I gave them the complete address and everything, and, right?
Well, but that's not the situation here. As to the argument that she raises for the first time before this court regarding the missing condominium number, that was completely unexhausted. So the court shouldn't even reach that. But even if they do, the case that she relies on, Peralta Cabrera v. Gonzalez, is distinguishable. In that case, the court stated that once an alien satisfies his duty under the INA and provides an address where he can be contacted, it is the government's responsibility to ensure that mail is properly addressed so that it can be delivered to the location the alien provided. But in that case, it was undisputed.
This is another confusion which the government is guilty of repeatedly, and it's implicit here. That's the confusion between the government's duty to send notice and the right of a person who didn't receive the notice to have a hearing. Those are completely separate points. So the government did fine in the sense that it sent the mail to her address. Now, actually, it should have investigated, but at least, you know, it complied with its notice requirement. But if she didn't receive the notice, she's entitled to a hearing. So you're discussing an issue which is a non-issue in this case.
Well, in Peralta Cabrera, the alien there also did not receive the notice of hearing. But it was because the mailing wasn't addressed to him in care of the person.
This is this basic confusion. The confusion between giving notice and receipt of notice. If the government uses the address supplied by the alien, then it has complied with its requirement to give notice. But that's different. If the person doesn't receive notice, even though it's perfect notice, but it's not always received, maybe it's lost by the post office, then this person has a right to a hearing.
I agree with that, but if the person didn't provide a complete address to begin with.
There's never been a determination as to the circumstances in which this mistake was made.
Well, that's because with her motion to reopen, she didn't provide any evidence, and she never even said if she lived there.
This burden of proof that it's not enough to say I didn't receive notice, which everybody agrees. You have to say I didn't receive notice, and moreover, it wasn't my fault.
But that's consistent with this court's case law, that the alien cannot thwart delivery of the notice of hearing.
But that's different from what the pleading burden is. Of course the government can show that she thwarted delivery. The question is whether she has to say, I didn't thwart delivery.
Well, I mean, as the moving party, she should have, at a minimum, said that.
In case law and anywhere, is there some provision that if you ask for a hearing because you didn't receive notice, and everyone agrees you didn't receive notice, you must state in your motion that you did not try to thwart delivery. Has that ever been said before?
She would not have had to say
that. Has that ever been said before?
I'm sorry. No, Your Honor, but She.
I don't want the but.
Okay.
No, it's never been a requirement before. Never been stated by the board, by the Justice Department, by a court. It's invented by you for this appeal.
I'm sorry, I respectfully disagree.
Why? You didn't invent it?
No.
Somewhere else? You can read it.
The problem in this case is that she never even said that she still lived there. The board knew that at some point...
She never got a chance to say anything because there was no hearing.
But she had an opportunity to submit a motion to reopen, and she should have...
What should have been in that... In your view, what should have been in that motion to reopen, Ms. Lutt?
With the motion to reopen, she should have stated in her affidavit whether she lived at that address at the time or whether she had moved. She could have gotten third-party affidavits or anything to show that why it would not have gotten to her.
But what made her to think that that was supposed to be in her motion?
Since
no one has ever... stated that as never said, when you want to reopen on the basis of non-receipt of notice, you must, as Judge Flom suggested, you must state that you lived at that address and that you didn't try to thwart delivery to that address, right? Now you think that those are pleading requirements.
Yes. That
but
she...
You have absolutely no basis in any... official document that those are pleading requirements, and you just can turn a person down because she didn't put those in her motion.
Well, it was her.
Well, yes, that's your position, right?
Well, it was her responsibility.
Is that your position?
Yes, she was supposed to support.
Is that your position?
That she did not.
That these are pleading requirements for a motion to reopen on the basis of non-receipt of service.
Yes, that she would have to support her motion to reopen with evidence.
And there's no basis for that. You invented that for this appeal.
I'm sorry.
For this appeal. You have no basis for it.
All I was trying to say, Your Honor.
You have invented these pleading requirements for this appeal, and you are basing your argument on these pleading requirements. She failed to plead in accordance with what you think should be required for a motion to reopen.
No, well, looking at the case law.
Don't say yeah. Don't say no. That's what you're saying. That's your ground for affirmance, is that she didn't satisfy these two pleading requirements.
She did not meet her burden of proof to reopen, is my... Correct, because she was required to support her motion to reopen with evidence, and she did not provide any evidence beyond her bare affidavit, which simply stated she didn't receive the notice of hearing, but we don't know why she didn't receive it, if it was something that, if she had, she never at a minimum even said that she lived at that address or the address was correct.
Which she had to plead that in order to be allowed to get a hearing.
Correct. And so based on that motion to reopen and the affidavit that she submitted, she did not meet her burden of proof for reopening and rescission.
Okay, well, thank you, Ms. Lott. So, Mr. Shepherd, do you have anything further? Ms. Shepherd, I'm sorry.
Unless Your Honor has another question.
Okay, well, thank you very much, and court will be in recess.